Imagine you're spending like 3 hours staring at a perfectly filtered sunset on your screen.
Right, just mindlessly scrolling.
Yeah. You see the vibrant oranges and pinks, you watch the engagement metrics tick up, but you feel absolutely nothing. You are completely numb.
Totally disconnected.
Exactly. Then imagine putting the phone down, walking out into the actual woods, drinking a bitter cup of raw, ancient cacao, and feeling the universe like completely rewrite the physical wiring of your brain.
I mean, it's a massive contrast.
It really is.
We are looking at a culture experiencing extreme whiplash right now. People are just sprinting away from this state of total digital disconnection, and they're actively hunting for, profound biological reality.
Welcome to the deep dive. If you've been feeling that friction yourself, that exhaustion with polished screens and the sudden urge to seek out something undeniably real, you are right in the middle of this massive cultural and scientific pivot we are unpacking today.
And we have a really fascinating stack of sources for you today to sort of map this all out.
We do. It's a towering stack. We're looking at counseling research on social media distress, 2025 and 2026. Marketing and wellness trend reports outlining this fascinating concept called the unshittification of wellness.
Which is quite the term.
I know, right? Plus, we're pulling from a massive clinical psilocybin research database, some Harvard anthropological text on Mesoamerican codices, and brand new 2025 RAND survey data on U.S. psychedelic use.
It looks like a disparate stack of research on the surface, but the through line is actually incredibly clear when you dig into it.
Yeah, what's our mission here?
Basically, we are looking at the direct pipeline between modern digital burnout, the total rejection of manufactured technology, and the way 3,000-year-old mushroom rituals are currently colliding with cutting-edge neuroscience and AI.
So let's start right at the source of that friction, which is digital distress. Because if you've recently, say, deleted Instagram off your phone just to get your attention span back, or if you feel like you're constantly fighting the algorithm for your own peace of mind.
The clinical data completely backs you up.
Exactly. I was looking through the counseling research by Owens and Mascarenhas in our stack, and the impact of excessive social media use is just severe.
Oh, it's staggering.
It's driving anxiety, depression, and significant sleep disruption, particularly in youth. I mean, counselors are practically working as tech triage medics right now.
Right. They're actively using digital detoxes and cognitive behavioral therapy just to help people, survive their own
It's
phones.
crazy.
And that tech-induced despair, it's the catalyst here. It has triggered a massive systemic consumer rebellion. People are just exhausted by the digital facade.
Which brings us to those 2025 and 2026 trend reports. They officially label this the unshittification era of wellness.
Unshittification is a very visual term.
It really is.
Yeah.
But what does that actually look like in practice for someone's daily routine? Like, what are people actually doing differently?
Well, it means a total rejection of what they call AI slop.
Right, the generic algorithm manufactured content.
Exactly. Content that just feels completely hollow. Consumers are abandoning vanity metrics and that old, no pain, no gain aesthetic perfection.
They don't just want to look good anymore.
No, they want biological truth. They are prioritizing functional longevity over everything else.
Like the walking trend we saw in the data.
Yes. The data shows a 2,968% increase in interest for Japanese walking.
Wow, almost 3,000%.
Yeah, because people aren't trying to look like fitness models on a treadmill anymore. They are engaging in a highly functional, mindful, posture-focused practice to ensure physical stability as they age.
That makes a lot of sense, especially when you look at how the GLP-1 weight loss drug economy has like completely shifted the conversation around food.
Oh, totally.
It's no longer about counting calories just to be skinny. The trend reports show people are demanding protein-fortified foods and junkless ingredient lists.
Specifically for muscle preservation, right?
Right. It's like we are suddenly hyper-aware of our own physical frailty, and we're demanding biological receipts for everything we consume.
And marketing agencies are seeing this exact shift in how we consume information, too. There's a massive pivot toward anti-polish content.
Audiences are demanding radical transparency now.
Exactly. If a company wants to prove they aren't using ultra-processed foods, a multi-million-dollar glossy commercial actually hurts their credibility today.
So what actually works?
What works is like a shaky, unedited iPhone video showing the raw, unfiltered reality of their factory supply chain.
It's like we spent a decade photoshopping our lives, and now we're so starved for reality that a shaky iPhone video of a factory is worth more than a $1 million ad.
That's a perfect way to put it. The pendulum has completely swung the other way.
And you can see that in where people are migrating online, right? I mean, the data shows a mass exodus toward community-first platforms.
Yeah, places like Reddit, Discord, and WhatsApp.
Because people want unfiltered, deep dialogue, not just broadcast ads. Even the AI industry is trying to save itself with this positive AI framework.
Right. Attempting to design algorithms that align with human well-being instead of just hacking our attention spans for engagement.
But, I mean, I'm genuinely getting stuck on the marketing aspect here. Let me push back on this a bit.
Sure, go for it.
If tech companies and PR agencies are using sophisticated AI-driven SEO to mathematically optimize for anti-polish content,
yeah,
aren't we just finding a brand new, sneakier way to hack human psychology? Under the guise of authenticity?
Well, there is an undeniable paradox there, absolutely. You can't mass manufacture authenticity without it eventually becoming its own form of slop.
Right. It just becomes the new fake.
Exactly. However, the underlying consumer demand driving the shift is very real. People are done with superficial fixes.
They want things that actually work.
Yes. If they are demanding biological truth for their physical health, like we see with the GLP-1 economy, they are applying that exact same radical standard to their mental health.
So a generic meditation app isn't going to cut it.
Not anymore. A beautifully designed habit tracker isn't enough to pull someone out of deep digital despair. They need a profound, proven biological intervention.
Which leads directly to the explosion in tools that have a historical track record spanning thousands of years.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the psychedelics data. Because if people are running from digital despair and demanding massive neurological rewiring, they're clearly finding it here.
They absolutely are.
I know we have this massive 2025 RAND survey in our stack.
Yeah.
Just how mainstream has this actually gotten?
I mean, it has completely moved out of the fringe. The RAND data estimates that 11 million U.S. adults used psilocybin in the past year alone.
11 million. That is a staggering slice of the population.
It is. That makes it the most widely used psychedelic in the country, significantly ahead of MDMA, ketamine, LSD, and even Amanita muscaria.
And looking at the OOTW master database in our stack, this isn't just, you know, recreational exploration.
No, not at all.
This is being driven by heavy, peer-reviewed clinical validation. Mm. We're tracking over 220 studies here.
And the Compass Pathways Phase 3 trials are a huge part of that.
Right, specifically CCOMP-005 for treatment-resistant depression. They just hit their primary endpoints.
Which is a massive milestone for the field.
But I want to dig into the why here. Because millions of people are on standard daily SSRI and antidepressants. And clearly, for many, they aren't fully resolving the issue.
Right.
Why do psychedelics work when standard pharmaceutical interventions fail?
The mechanism really comes down to neuroplasticity. Standard SSRIs generally work by increasing the amount of serotonin floating in the synaptic cleft.
Which helps regulate mood, right?
It can, over time, but it's often a slow process and can sometimes come with a blunting of overall emotion. Psilocybin works entirely differently.
How so?
Well, a 2023 study from the University of Helsinki found that psilocin, which is the active compound your body, converts psilocybin into binds directly to the TRKB receptor.
Okay, and what is the TRKB receptor?
It's the brain's primary neuroplasticity receptor.
And how potent is that binding compared to what we normally prescribe for depression?
It binds to that TRKB receptor 1,000 times more potently than standard antidepressants.
Wait, 1,000 times? That's insane.
It is. This isn't just about shifting neurotransmitter levels. It is structural. Research out of Yale demonstrates that this binding causes rapid dendritic spine growth.
So the brain is literally growing new physical connections.
Exactly. Between neurons within 24 hours. Furthermore, a 2023 paper from Johns Hopkins by Nardu and colleagues showed that psychedelics reopen what is called the social reward learning critical period.
I've heard of this. It's like a state of hypermalleability in the brain, right?
Yes, a state that is usually permanently closed after childhood.
So think of your brain's daily habits like sled tracks in the snow.
I like this analogy.
If you have severe depression or anxiety, you've been running that same sled down the exact same hill for years. Those grooves are so deep, you physically cannot steer out of them.
We're just stuck in the track.
Right. So psilocybin essentially acts as a massive fresh blizzard. It fills in the tracks entirely, giving you this brief window to steer the sled wherever you want and carve a brand new path.
The fresh snow analogy captures the structural reality of what is happening perfectly. And what is vital to understand is that this biological rewiring happens at the cellular level, regardless of the subjective psychological experience.
So you don't even have to have a deep mystical trip to get the benefits.
No, and we have a Yale study in the stack led by Dr. Emmanuel Schindler focusing on migraines to prove it. They administered a single dose of psilocybin, which reduced weekly migraine days by 1.65 compared to a placebo.
Wow.
The crucial finding was that this therapeutic physical effect happened completely independently of how intense the acute psychedelic trip was for the patient.
So you don't necessarily have to see the walls melting to get the biological benefit of those new neural pathways.
Exactly.
But wait, let me push back hard on this.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'm looking at the 2024 BMJ meta-analysis we have here. It shows that when clinical trials use an active placebo, meaning a pill, that mimics the physical side effects of a trip, like a racing heart or a flush, but without the actual psychedelic effect.
Right. Active placebos are tricky.
Yeah. Because when they use them, the measured effect size of psilocybin shrinks significantly.
It does drop, yes.
So if the data gets that much weaker when people merely think they might be tripping, how much of this neurological rewiring is just the ultimate, highly suggestible placebo effect?
You are pointing to one of the most difficult methodological hurdles in psychiatric research, which is functional unblinding.
Because people usually know when they're tripping.
Exactly. In a clinical trial, it is nearly impossible to hide who received a high-dose psychedelic and who received a standard sugar pill. The patients know immediately.
So the active placebo tried to trick them.
Right. When researchers use an active placebo like high-dose niacin, which makes your skin flush and tingle, they attempt to confuse the control group into thinking they might have gotten the psychedelic.
And what happens then?
When you do that, the expectation levels balance out. And yes, the statistical effect size of the psychological relief drops.
Ah.
However, the biological effect does not disappear.
The snow still falls.
Exactly. The dendritic spine growth, the neurogenesis, the 1,000-fold TRKB binding, those are objective physical markers that occur regardless of suggestion.
So the placebo effect is just playing a role in how we interpret the healing.
Precisely. The subjective experience of the trip absolutely amplifies the psychological healing, but the foundational rewiring of the brain is a measurable physical reality, not just wishful thinking.
Which brings us to the practical application of all this, because most of those 11 million users in the RAND survey aren't, you know, in a sterile Yale laboratory wearing an eye mask.
No, they're just normal people.
Right. They're integrating this into their daily lives. And if we look back at the unshittification trends, people want profound functional benefits. But they still have to go to work and pick their kids up from school.
They can't just check out of reality for 8 hours.
Exactly. Which explains the microdosing data perfectly. The RAND survey shows that of the adults using psychedelics, about 10 million microdosed psilocybin, LSD, or MDMA in the past year.
It's a huge portion of the user base.
Looking specifically at psilocybin, 69% of users microdosed at least once. And out of the more than 200 million total use days reported, nearly half were just microdoses.
And we have robust population data on why they are making that choice, too. The Scientific Reports study in our stack analyzed data from the Quantified Citizen app, pulling from over 8,700 respondents.
That's a huge sample size. What do they find?
Microdosers consistently reported lower anxiety, depression, and stress scores on the DAS-21 scale compared to non-microdosers.
So it's actively improving their baseline.
Yes, and their primary motivations weren't recreational. At all, they were overwhelmingly related to health, wellness, and daily optimization.
Since you listening are likely already familiar with the basic concepts of microdosing and stacking, let's look at what the newest data actually says about the chemical synergy of these stacks.
Because people aren't just taking isolated psilocybin anymore, they are combining it.
Right, exactly. A massively popular modern stack involves adding lion's mane mushroom and niacin. What is the actual biological mechanism happening in the body when someone takes that specific combination?
It's a sophisticated attempt to optimize pharmacokinetics. Lion's mane is thought to act as a mild MAOI, a monoamine oxidase inhibitor.
Okay, and what does that enzyme normally do?
Monoamine oxidase is an enzyme in your stomach and liver that naturally breaks down compounds like psilocin.
So it destroys the active ingredient before it hits the brain.
Right. By introducing a mild MAOI, you are temporarily inhibiting that enzyme, allowing more of the active psilocin to survive the digestive tract and cross the blood-brain barrier.
Oh, wow. And what about the niacin?
Niacin, which is vitamin B3, is a potent vasodilator. It opens up the blood vessels, particularly the capillaries near the skin, which causes that characteristic flush we talked about earlier.
So you get all red and tingly.
Yeah. The working theory behind this stack is that the vasodilation pushes the active neuroplastic compounds deeper and more rapidly into the peripheral and central nervous systems.
Meaning you get more out of a smaller dose.
Exactly, maximizing the biological benefit of a very small amount.
So it's essentially treating the nervous system like a highly responsive network, using natural compounds to bypass the body's standard metabolic roadblocks, like a high-performance fuel additive for your daily routine, rather than taking the car to the mechanic for a full engine rebuild.
That is a great analogy.
But again, I have to play devil's advocate here.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
That Rootman study relies on self-selected users who intentionally downloaded a wellness app to track their microdosing.
Yes, the Quantified Citizen app.
Right. They already believe it's going to work. And I see rapid reviews here, like the 2024 paper from Polito and Lichnansky, suggesting that when you run rigorous double-blind randomized controlled trials on microdosing,
The clinical trials, yeah.
the cognitive and emotional effects barely push past a standard placebo. Are we just watching the modern wellness optimization crowd project their hopes onto tiny sub-perceptual amounts of fungus?
It is a fierce debate dividing the scientific community right now.
I can imagine.
On one side, you have massive population-level epidemiological data showing profound, sustained daily benefits from microdosing. People swear by it.
The lab data doesn't match.
On the other side, in sterile laboratory settings, separating those benefits from expectation bias is incredibly difficult. Because the dose is subperceptual by definition, the subjective effects are subtle.
So how do we actually figure out if it works?
What the field needs now are rigorous longitudinal designs that track biomarkers over years, not just a 6-week trial.
That makes sense.
But regardless of whether it is a subtle pharmacological cascade or an incredibly powerful placebo driven by a daily intention, the cultural behavioral shift is undeniable. People are actively seeking out these specific ancient tools to heal themselves.
And that search for ancient tools brings us to the historical context. Because whether you are taking a clinical macrodose in a hospital trial or, carefully optimizing your Tuesday morning with a lion's mane stack.
You are fundamentally participating in the reclamation of an ancient technology.
Right. We are craving authentic offline connection, and we're finding its ultimate expression in indigenous ceremonies.
Absolutely. The Harvard Center for the Study of World Religions research in our stack traces this exact practice back 3,000 years to Mesoamerica.
3,000 years. That's incredible.
We have records like the Mixtec Codex, Vindobonensis, Mexicanus I. If you look at plate 24 of that pictographic manuscript, it clearly depicts a deity named Lady 11 Lizard holding mushrooms.
And what did those represent for them?
They directly associated them with life, rain, and fertility. The Nahua people, including the Aztecs, referred to these mushrooms as teonacatl.
Which translates to the flesh of the gods, right?
Exactly. And the colonial records, like the Florentine Codex, describe exactly how they were used.
It wasn't a solitary thing, was it?
Not at all. Traders would consume these mushrooms with honey, they would dance, weep, and then sit together to share their visionary experiences.
It was a deeply communal, purposeful act. And there is a specific ancient combination from these cultures that is making a huge resurgence right now, which is cacao and psilocybin.
Yes. The Aztecs practiced cacoxochitl, which literally means chocolate mushrooms.
Which is fascinating when we look at it through the lens of modern biology, because the chemical synergy between those two plants is astounding.
It really is. Psilocybin acts as a vasoconstrictor, meaning it narrows the blood vessels.
Which often causes that physical anxiety, nausea, or body load that people feel during the onset of a dose.
Right. Cacao, however, contains a primary active compound called theobromine.
And what does theobromine do?
It is a powerful vasodilator.
So the cacao is physically opening the blood vessels right as the psilocybin is trying to constrict them.
Exactly. It effectively neutralizes the physical anxiety and lowers the blood pressure spikes.
That's brilliant.
Furthermore, raw cacao is incredibly rich in flavonoids, which specifically improves cerebral blood flow.
Oh, wow.
So right as the psilocin is binding to those TRKB receptors we talked about and demanding energy to grow new dendritic spines, the cacao is delivering a massive surge of oxygenated blood directly to the brain.
It's like the perfect delivery system.
It is. Additionally, mushrooms contain their own natural MAOIs, specifically bocarbolines, and cacao has trace amounts as well. Combined, they create a highly synergistic biological environment that extends and smooths out the entire physiological experience.
The ancients mapped out this chemical perfection thousands of years ago, even if they described it in spiritual terms rather than pharmacological ones.
Exactly. They knew exactly what they were doing.
And today, people are attempting to bring these practices into their homes to respect the power of the tool. Modern ceremonial guides outline a psychedelic experience in three distinct phases.
Right. The first phase is preparation. This isn't just about dosage. It's about setting a clear intention and building a safe container or environment.
And the second?
The second phase is the experience itself, the act of surrender to the process, which is almost always guided by specific evocative music to direct the emotional flow.
But it's the third phase that is actually the most critical, right?
Yeah.
Integration.
Yes, absolutely.
This is the process of grounding yourself afterward, getting out into nature, journaling, and talking through the experience with a community.
Which is vital.
And if we tie that back to the neuroscience we discussed earlier, that integration phase is when that social reward learning critical period is wide open.
The fresh snow is on the ground.
Exactly. Integration is when you actively steer the sled and carve the new pathways. If you don't do the integration work, the snow hardens right back into the exact same dysfunctional patterns.
It's the work you do after the trip that actually changes your life.
But looking at all this, I have to ask, as PR agencies start pushing spiritual marketing for conscious brands, which we saw outlined in those marketing materials earlier, how do we balance this?
It's a tough balance.
Because how do we take the clinical, data-driven approach of our 2025 wellness trends and marry it with the deep, sacred respect these ancient Mesoamerican cultures held?
Right.
It feels a bit like we're taking a deeply sacred indigenous temple and trying to flat pack it into an IKEA box so the modern wellness consumer can quickly assemble it in their living room.
It is a highly valid critique of how Western culture tends to commodify indigenous practices.
We do have a habit of doing that.
We have a habit of isolating the active molecule and discarding the entire cultural framework that kept its use safe and purposeful for millennia.
So how do we avoid that?
Well, knowledge is most valuable when it is understood and applied holistically. The clinical data is vital. It gives us the safety profile, the dosages, and the biological mechanisms of the TRKB receptors. It tells us the how.
Right.
But the ancient wisdom provides the container, the communal intention, and the respect. It tells us the why. Balancing them means acknowledging that profound mental healing is not just a chemical transaction you can optimize.
It's not just popping a pill.
No, it is a relational experience that requires effort.
So let's bring this all together for you listening. We are living through a massive, undeniable societal shift right now.
We really are.
We are collectively turning our backs on digital distress. We are exhausted by polished AI slop. And we are moving away from pharmaceutical symptom management that just, you know, blunts the edges of our lives.
The pendulum has swung wildly.
It has. We are pivoting toward raw biological truth.
Mm-hmm.
We want offline, unfiltered community, and we are actively seeking out the profound neurological rewiring offered by psychedelics and the ancient ceremonial practices that support them.
We are witnessing the real-time synthesis of the oldest human traditions with the absolute newest scientific validations. It is a demand for reality in an increasingly artificial world.
And that leaves us with a final thought to ponder.
Yeah.
If our modern epidemic of digital burnout is driving us back to 3,000-year-old mushroom rituals and raw, unpolished human connections,
yep.
As artificial intelligence inevitably becomes perfectly capable of faking authenticity and algorithmically modeling our exact well-being needs just to keep us on our screens.
Which is coming.
Will the ultimate luxury of the future simply be an unplugged afternoon in the woods with a cup of ceremonial cacao and our own unfiltered minds?
It is the ultimate question of what we will value when everything else can be simulated.
Take a close look at your own wellness routines this week. Actively question the sources of your digital information. Think about where you are demanding biological truth and continue exploring the fascinating depths of your own mind. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.